Here are some typical questions that I've been asked in many different settings over the world. Question: are we basically a product of nature, that is our genes, or of nurture, that is our upbringing and environmental conditions? My answer is that the very question itself is based on a false dichotomy. It is based on a false paradigm or map of human nature, that of determinism. We are a product of neither nature nor nurture. We are a product of choice, because there is always a space between stimulus and response. As we wisely exercise our power to choose based on principles, the space will become larger. Little children and people who are mentally handicapped may not have that space, but the overwhelming majority of adults do. Determinism is deeply embedded into present-day culture and is reinforced by the terrifying sense that if I do have choice, then I am responsible for my present situation. Until a person can honestly say, "I am what I am, and I am where I am because I so chose to be there," that person cannot say with real conviction, "I choose otherwise." Even though nature and nurture certainly influence us, we are fundamentally a product of our choices. Next question: are leaders born or made? Meaning environmentally conditioned and trained. Again, this question is based on a false dichotomy, a flawed paradigm of determinism. Because of the space between stimulus and response, people have the power of choice. Therefore, leaders are neither born nor made, meaning environmentally trained and nurtured. They are self-made through chosen responses, and if they choose based on principles and develop increasingly greater discipline, their freedom to choose increases. In the book Geeks and Geezers, How Era, Values, and Defining Moments Shape Leaders, authors Warren G. Bennis and Robert J. Thomas make the case that leaders are made, not born. The basic concept is that because of one intense transformational experience, they made those choices that enable them to become a leader. Dr. Noel Tishy also basically says that leaders aren't born, they are taught. Again, the implication is that people make the choice to be taught and to follow the teachings. In both instances, the authors are really saying that leaders aren't made or born, they are self-made. Leadership is a function of choices. Next question: must you develop all four capacities or intelligences? My answer is yes, because you really won't be able to develop any one of them to its mature, sustainable level without working on all four. This is what integrity means. It means being integrated. It means the whole of our life is integrated around principles. Our capacity for production and enjoyment is a function, in the last analysis, of our character, our integrity. This takes constant effort to develop the physical muscle fiber, the emotional social muscle fiber, the mental muscle fiber, and the spiritual muscle fiber by getting us out of our comfort zones and doing those exercises that cause the fiber to break, that causes pain. Then it is repaired and enlarged and strengthened after a proper period of rest and relaxation. An excellent book called The Power of Full Engagement by authors Jim Lohr and Tony Swartz explains this process beautifully. Another question: what about retirement? My answer is that we should retire from our job but never from meaningful projects, and that if we want to live a long life, we need eustress, that is, a deep sense of meaning and of contribution to worthy projects and causes, particularly your intergenerational family. If you want to die early, retire to golf and fishing and sit around swallowing prescriptions and occasionally seeing your grandkids. You want evidence for this? Study Hans Selye's book, Stress Without Distress. Let me now present a practical guide to action in developing the four intelligences and capacities, the development of which will nurture this internal security and this moral authority and put us on the higher road to greatness, where we literally find or create our voice and have the capacity to inspire others to find and create their voices. Let's start in developing physical intelligence, what we call PQ. This is the body. It is the instrument of the mind, heart, and spirit. If we can subordinate the body to the spirit, that is, our appetites and passions to our conscience, we can become the master of ourselves. People whose lives are a function of their appetites and passions rather than their conscience cannot give of themselves. Their space between stimulus and response is narrowed. They lose personal freedom, thinking all the while that they are exercising it. The body is a good servant, but a bad master. The Greek expression of the self-mastery formula for life is this: know thyself, control thyself, give thyself. This is a magnificent sequence. I suggest that there are three fundamental ways in developing our physical intelligence. First, wise nutrition. Second, consistent, balanced exercise. Third, proper rest, relaxation, stress management, and prevention thinking. These three ways are widely understood and accepted by most people in the civilized world. They're really common sense. But remember, common sense is not common practice. Very few people practice all three of them. In their book, The Power of Full Engagement, Jim Lehrer and Tony Schwartz emphasize that managing energy, not time, is the key to high performance and personal renewal. They certainly respect time management, but they suggest that the highest criterion to be used in the management of one's time is how you manage your energy. By studying nature and the natural laws that govern all humanity, they emphasize the importance of respecting the cycle that oscillates between activity, performance, and rest, renewal. They use the whole person approach: body, mind, heart, and spirit. They focus on the importance of habits, which they call rituals, to increase our energy and performance capability. Wise nutrition. Most of us know what we should and shouldn't eat. The key is balance and moderation and temperance. I readily admit I am not an expert nutritionist, but I, like most of us, have been educated to know that our bodies and systems, including the immune system, are strengthened most when we eat more whole grains, vegetables, fruits, and lower-fat proteins. Meats, when eaten, better sparingly, should be lean. Research also increasingly shows the benefits of eating fish regularly. Foods, including many fast foods, processed foods, and sweets, foods that are high in saturated fat and high in sugar, should be eaten very sparingly or avoided. But remember again, the key is balance and moderation. Learn not to indulge yourself and pig out. In other words, learn when to stop eating, when you are satisfied and short of being uncomfortably full. Finally, drink a lot of water, 6 to 10 glasses a day. It optimizes the body's functions and significantly contributes to one's efforts to maintain physical fitness and a healthy weight through diet and regular exercise. I have also come to believe in the efficacy and wisdom of occasional fasting, wherein you miss a meal or two for the purposes of providing rest to the whole digestive process and also for cleansing. From my own experience, the main benefit, however, has not been physical. It has been more mental and spiritual. The principle of fasting is taught in almost all major world religions as a means of developing a higher level of self-mastery and self-control and consciousness, and also a deeper awareness of how really dependent we are. I strongly believe that when you properly control your appetites, your ability to control your passions and to purify your desires increases. It gives you a real feeling of humility and enables you to gain greater perspective about what is really important in life. I have also experienced the negative fruits of overeating, extreme dieting, and mindless eating of junk food. My biggest temptation personally comes when I'm on the road, exhausted at the end of the day, and I go to a hotel and order room service. I find when I'm unwise and indulge myself, it affects my mind and my spirit and even the quality of my sleep. The legendary coach Vince Lombardi used to say, "Fatigue makes cowards of us all." This is surely true in my case, because when I really get tired, I tend to slip into a self-indulging pattern, and it really does affect my mind and my spirit for a day or two. When you subordinate your body to your mind and your spirit, the peace and confidence that flow from that kind of discipline and self-mastery is enormous. In fact, for myself, when I feel hunger pains that aren't really associated with true hunger, but are more a function of the withdrawal of a sugar addiction or some emotional need, I try to train myself to say to myself, "Nothing tastes as good as thin feels." I also try to visualize those so-called hunger pains gobbling up the fat stores. When we subordinate taste to nutrition, gradually we re-educate our taste buds to give voice to the trillions of cells that are screaming for proper nutrition. But really, all of this is a personal matter, and everyone must decide what is a wise nutrition for him or her. I do believe, however, that almost everyone can experience the tremendous benefits of winning the private victory over the body. Such a victory also impacts our ability to produce public victories in our relationships with others and on reorienting ourselves to a life of service and contribution. Consistent, balanced exercise. Regular exercise, cardiovascular, strength, and flexibility, significantly increase both the quality of life and life expectancy. Again, the key is balance. Our society has adopted increasingly sedentary, inactive lifestyles. But there are so many ways to get regular exercise. Start small in ways you can sustain. Do something daily or at least 3 to 5 times a week. Choose something you enjoy and that fits your special needs and conditions. Consult with your physician. Vary the kinds of exercises you do so that you strengthen different parts of your body and avoid becoming bored or burned out on one thing. Many people love to walk vigorously if possible. Others run, swim, garden, or bike. Many take advantage of equipment in gyms designed to give you an aerobic or cardiovascular workout, such as treadmills, stationary bicycles, stair climbers, elliptical machines, rowing machines, etc. Weightlifting, as well as other strength training, has many significant benefits for people of all ages, including improving one's strength, posture, energy, slowing and stopping the deterioration of the bones, and increasing the body's ability to burn calories. I cannot say enough personally about the inevitable fruits that I experience from consistent, balanced exercise. For me, the greatest benefit is mental and spiritual rather than physical, even though I'm very impressed by the overwhelming research that shows the physical benefits that come from regular exercise. Aerobic exercise, wherein you use the big muscles of the leg to strengthen the heart and the circulatory systems so that you can process oxygen in the most efficient way, has always been the basic foundation of my exercise program. My preferred aerobic exercise is running, but I have messed up my knees in various sports activities and now need to use a stationary bike. But I have found that while I'm on the bike, I can do other things as well. I can talk to people on the phone and conduct business, even though I am breathing like a frantic Darth Vader. I can watch either educational or entertainment television. I can have a meaningful conversation with my wife or children or friends who are exercising at the same time. We encourage each other and share our best ideas with each other on what works and what doesn't. I've also come to believe strongly in the importance of muscle toning and flexibility exercises. I remember once a trainer spotting me in a bench press exercise. He basically told me to go as far as I could go and then to do one more. I asked him why, and he said that most of the benefit comes at the very end of the exercise when the muscle fiber is exhausted and breaks, causing pain, and within 48 hours is renewed and strengthened. This was a fascinating learning experience for me because I wanted to quit when I was tired and hurting. But he stood above me and said, "I'll take the bar as soon as you cannot go any further." This is a great metaphor for the other three dimensions of life as well. As we go to the end of our tether, our capacity to do increases. Emerson put it this way: That which we persist in doing becomes easier. Not that the nature of the thing has changed, but our ability to do has increased. My particular commitment is to exercise 5 to 6 days a week aerobically, 3 days a week in muscle toning, and 6 days a week in some kind of stretching and or yoga for flexibility. I have also benefited from Pilates in strengthening the inner core. Everyone has to study his or her own situation and determine that which is most wise. But again, I am convinced that exercise increases our own sense of self-control and self-mastery, which enhances the totality of our lives and truly enlarges the space between stimulus and response. When I was teaching at the university with full semesters, I encouraged the students to develop their own particular goals they wanted to achieve for that semester. The overwhelming majority of the students selected proper eating and regular exercise as one of their goals. This is what I would call a win-win agreement with the students. And once it was approved, they were responsible and accountable. They were also to share their insights and learnings from these experiences and to evaluate themselves against the goals they had selected. Because this evaluation became a significant portion of the grade they received for the course, they had both external and internal motivation. Some students didn't want to deal with the physical side, which was fine. They would set and be accountable for other goals they felt they should accomplish. You would not believe the fruits that came from those who conquered their sugar or junk food addiction and who exercised a minimum of 30 minutes at least 3 times a week. Cultivating these new habits and breaking old ones became so enormously impactful that it affected all their relationships. It affected their energy, their mental acumen, their studies, and their sense of self-mastery. At the end of the semester, those who hadn't selected physical goals wished that they had when they heard the testimonies of those who had selected and achieved their physical mastery goals. Just think about it for a moment. There are 168 hours in every person's week. But if you will physically sharpen the saw through regular and balanced exercise for, let's say, only 2 or 3 of those 168 hours, you will experience such a positive effect of those 2 or 3 on the other 166, including the depth and quality of your sleep, that you will begin to see the tremendous leverage and power that comes in your life from this kind of self-mastery. Mind over mattress. Third area, proper rest, relaxation, stress management, and prevention thinking. The work of the great pioneer and leader in the field of stress, Dr. Hans Selye, suggests that there are 2 kinds of stress, distress and eustress. Distress comes from hating your work, resenting the multiplied pressures of life, and feeling that you are a victim. Eustress comes from the positive tension between where we are now and where we want to go. Some meaningful goal or project or cause that really turns us on and taps into our talents and passion. In short, our voice. Through good empirical research, Dr. Selye taught how eustress braces the immune system and increases longevity and enjoyment of life. In short, we shouldn't avoid stress if it's the right kind of stress. Eustress. It will strengthen us and enlarge our capacity. Of course, it must all be balanced and tempered by the proper rest and relaxation, or what is called stress management, or more properly, eustress management. Selye explained that women live roughly 7 years longer than men for psychological, spiritual reasons, not physiological reasons. A woman's work is never done. In professional circles, it is widely accepted that at least 2/3 of all diseases are caused by lifestyle choices that people make. Probably more than 2/3. These choices relate to nutrition, to smoking, to insufficient rest and relaxation, to attempting to burn the candle at both ends, and many, many other abuses of the body. Many attribute various diseases to genetic factors, but as we have mentioned before, there is always a space between stimulus and response. And when people are aware of the space and aware of their own capacity to make choices based on principles, they don't necessarily get the diseases of their genetic predisposition. Even most cancers can be cured if they are detected in the first or second stage before they become aggressive later on. Modern Western medicine is primarily focused on treatment rather than prevention, and the treatment usually comes under the two categories of chemistry or surgery. I would like to see the medical paradigm become broader, deeper, and more complementary with empirically validated alternative therapies. I think it's very important to have frequent checkups, at least annually, so that various disease tendencies or symptoms can yield to wise choices. I myself have a treatment doctor and a prevention doctor and respect both of them enormously. I have learned that the most fundamental principle is that we must take responsibility for our own health. We must ask questions, get very involved, study, check second opinions, and look at alternative forms of therapy rather than just throw the responsibility for our health and wellness to an outside person or profession.